pleasure to be here, and thank you to Rabbi Fine and to all those involved in so much of what goes on here to allow and enable all of us to have opportunities to inspire ourselves and inspire each other. I always feel uncomfortable when it comes to this time of the year and we're expected to talk about Inyanei Teshuva and self-reflection, almost as if you expect that I have the answers of how to get through the season of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in an effective manner. I don't have the answers. I don't know what to say. I'm in the same kind of confused place as all of us are. And I guess confused is not the right word, but I think it's a very overwhelming time of year. And there are no real answers that anyone can give because Lei Yodea Maros Nafsho. We each know ourselves better than anyone can ever tell us. We know what our milas are. We know what our chasronos are. We know what we need to work on. And there's nobody that can really point it out to us better than ourselves. So what I wanted to talk about today, I'm actually reminded, the Dubna Magid has a very beautiful mashal where he says, mashal l'nechei raglayim. He writes that there was somebody who was a cripple. And every night, every time he needed anything, there were always members of the community that assisted him, that helped him out with everything he needed. And one night he looks out the window at 2 o'clock in the morning and he sees a raging fire down the block, a couple of houses down, and he's terrified. He's terrified because he doesn't know, are there people in that house? But beyond that, he's terrified because he knows it can so easily spread to his home and he has no way of getting out. Everybody else can save themselves, but he needs the assistance of somebody else. And he starts screaming and shouting. Nothing's working. Nobody's coming. He doesn't know what to do until finally he takes out his trumpet. He blows the trumpet out the window and all the neighbors wake up. They come rushing to his house and they ask him, what's wrong? Everything okay? He says, I'm fine, but look what's going on down the block. And I'm concerned that if that fire is going to spread, then perhaps I'm going to be in trouble as well. So maybe while you're saving yourself, he says, maybe you can save me at the same time. And the Dubna Magid said that is what he felt every time he got up to speak during the month of El or Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim. He had that frame of mind. Do I know the answers? Am I able to save myself? But maybe if I inspire somebody else to save themselves, maybe they'll have the great understanding that they should save me along with them as well. And that's all we try to do, is to inspire each other. We should all be on a journey together to try to understand what it is that we're supposed to do. When we think about Rosh Hashanah, it's interesting that the Davening describes it as Kol Bayi Olam Yavrun Defanecha Kivnei Maro. We assume that there's something very serious going on Rosh Hashanah. We refer to it as the Yom HaDin. It's fascinating that if you look through all the Psukim and Chumash, nowhere is Rosh Hashanah described as a Yom HaDin. But the assumption is that Rosh Hashanah is a very serious time of year. And in preparation for that, we have the entire month of Elul. If you begin from Chodesh Elul until Yom HaKippurim, which is really the culmination of everything that we try to do throughout this time of year, you will notice that it is a 40-day period, starting with Rosh Chodesh Elul and culminating after the Aseres Yemei Teshuva with Yom HaKippurim. What you may never have thought about is the fact that the number 40 is something that we find strewn about throughout Chumash, throughout Tanakh, throughout Halacha, so many different things. I'm not a gematria person at all. This is not my specialty, but this is so glaringly obvious. Let's just take a few examples, and I'm sure there are many others that you can add. First of all, the Pasuk tells us Moshe Rabbeinu goes up at Har Sinai, Arba'im Yom Ve'Arba'im Laila. That wasn't just a one-time occurrence. If you look carefully through the Psukim and Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu three times goes up to Har Sinai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu invites him to engage in conversation, to learn with the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, Arba'im Yom Ve'Arba'im Laila. If we go back all the way to the beginning of Chumash, so we're all familiar with the story of the Mabul. And the Torah tells us there, Ki liyamim od shiva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Noach that in another 7 days, Anochi mamtir al ha'aretz Arba'im Yom Ve'Arba'im Laila. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, he forecasts that there's going to be a Mabul, 40 days and 40 nights. The Gemara Maseches Nida tells us, sometimes you have a family that only wants to have a baby girl. Sometimes you have a family that only wants to have a baby boy. I feel very blessed. I have 5 healthy children. I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day that I have 5 children that are healthy. I can honestly say I've never once given 1 ounce of thought to the fact that all of them are boys. I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam that he gave me children that are successful, that are doing well, that are developing the way they're supposed to. V'kol yiten Hashem, v'kol yosif. And after my 5th boy was born, everybody in my shul who came over to us said, well, when's the girl coming? What's going to be? Doesn't it bother you? I said, I can honestly say I never thought about it. I don't ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a girl because whatever he gives me is perfect. Whatever he gives me is something that I'm grateful for. But there are such families where all they want is a boy, all they want is a girl. So the Gemara says, at what point in the gestational period, at what point during the pregnancy is one allowed to daven that they should have either a boy or a girl? So the Gemara says that ad arba'im yom, until 40 days in the development of the embryo, a parent or anyone is allowed to pray, is allowed to daven that they should have either a boy or a girl. But after arba'im yom, the Gemara says it's already yitziras havlad, the child has already been formed, and it's already been determined whether it's going to be a boy or a girl. And at that point, the Gemara says it would not be meaningful to make a tefillah that it should be one or the other because it has already been decided. And that would be what we refer to as a tefillas shav. That would be an inappropriate tefillah because it has no relevance, it has no meaning. Go on Yom Kippur. When is the most opportune time when people in shul fall asleep on Yom Kippur? Now, don't get me wrong. There is never a right time to fall asleep in shul. But when is the time when you look around shul and you will see most of the people that are going to sleep during the day is right then? When is that? What? Rabbi's speech. Not when I speak. I don't know which rabbis you know.
But just kidding.
No, you're not really. I always think if I had to sit through the rabbi's speech, I would also sleep. It's not so exciting. So that was a joke. So the time when many people fall asleep is during Maftir Yoma. It's like later in the day. It's downtime. Not really focused. It's a lot of perking, just a lot of reading. And you're not really reading along, but the story of Sefer Yonah is such a beautiful story. It's such an important story with so many valuable messages. And you look over there, and what was the instruction that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to Yonah? He tells him that he should go to the city of Nineveh, and Yonah, as we know, disobeys the instructions that he's given. He goes his own way, and he tries to run away, and then he ends up back there anyway. But what was the instruction? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, go to Nineveh and tell them, Od arba'im yom v'Nineveh nehepeches. They have 40 days until they are destroyed. Once again, this curious number, 40, that shows up by Nineveh, it shows up in the story of Yonah, as we find by Moshe Rabbeinu, the number that we find again by the Mabel. So many different instances where this seems to creep up once again. Just last week in the Parsha, the Torah describes what happens when somebody violates a certain set of averos. So the Torah says, Arba'im yakenu. The person is supposed to get malchus, they get lashes. But how many times do we hit the person? How many times do we punish them? 39. So we know it's 39, but if you look in Chumash, it says Arba'im Yakenu. Coincidental? Is that possible? When one goes to the mikveh, what is the minimum size that a mikveh is allowed to be in order to be effective in its process of tahara? Arba'im Sa'ah, the Mishnah says. It has to be 40 measures of water. And finally, how long were the Jewish people in the desert? How long were they in the Midbar? We're coming to the culmination of that story. Finally, they're on the cusp of going into Eretz Yisrael, the end of Sefer Devarim. It's so exciting, it's tragic that Moshe Rabbeinu loses his life, but the Jewish people are finally at their destiny. And how long was that? A journey of 40 years. So this is not coincidental. The Maharal writes in his commentary on Chumash that what this is all about is the following. In order to destroy, in order to exterminate that which was, in order to purge oneself of something that needs to be gotten rid of, you need 40. In order to create something new, you need 40 once again. And therefore, says the Maharal, you find this pattern over and over again. To be able to regenerate someone and give them a status of tahara, of purity, you need Arba'im Sa. To be able to create a nation coming out of Mitzrayim and being able to then be called the Am HaNivchar, the Am Segula, that are worthy of going into Eretz Yisrael, you need 40 years. That's a whole nation. In order to regenerate someone after they've done a terrible Avera, and they need to now be recreated to take that which was and get rid of it, you need Arba'im Yakenu. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take a corrupt and immoral world and get rid of all that was and restart everything anew, it's Arba'im Yom V'Arba'im Laila of rain, a deluge, a terrifying deluge that destroys everything, Arba'im Yom V'Arba'im Laila, and then we can start again. And if you just follow the theme of the Maharal, it's exactly what this time of year is for us as well. It's the month of Elul, with the 10 days that follow, Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, which give us the 40-day period to completely recreate ourselves, to purge ourselves of that which was, to make sure that we exterminate all of the negativity inside of ourselves and have the opportunity to now look at ourselves as new people who are given new opportunities to have a complete metamorphosis, a complete transformation of who we were, and now transform ourselves to who we want to be, a complete revolution. The son of the great Avnei Nezer, he was a great Talmud Chacham in the end of the 1800s, early 1900s. His name was Reb Shmuel Bornstein. He wrote a beautiful set of svarim on Chumash that is called the Shem Yishmuel. In the Sefer Shem Yishmuel, he writes something in the name of Reb Simcha Bunami Pshischa, one of the older Hasidic rabbis, where he says, when he used to talk to us about Shuvah, he said, Shuvah einena talai. Shuvah is not a patch, it's not a band-aid. Ela ka'adam shenafal min hagag v'nishtabru kol atzmosav. End quote. What does that mean? Shuvah is not a band-aid, Shuvah is not a patch. Rather, Shuvah is like someone who fell from the roof and broke all of their bones. What does he mean? Explain to Shem Yishmuel as follows. When somebody is bleeding, they don't need to be rushed to the hospital. You put a band-aid on, you put a little patch, you tape it up, they'll be okay. Unless they have some unusual condition. But they'll be okay. That's not what Shuvah is. Some people look at Shuvah and they say, well, I have a little scratch there, I have a little problem here, I have a little issue over there. So when I size up who I am and what my problems, where the holes are in my personality or in my Avodas Hashem, so I'll put a little patch here, a little band-aid there, that's what Shuvah is. Mistake. No. Ka'adam shenafal min hagag means, every so often you have the unfortunate situation where somebody falls off the roof. And what happens when they have a traumatic injury? A tremendous car accident, something terrible happens. And they need reconstructive surgery all over their body. They need skin grafts. Because everything that was needs to be redone to make it something new. That's what Shuvah is. Shuvah is not putting a band-aid, it's not putting a patch on all the different problems that we find. Shuvah is the opportunity, ka'adam shenafal min hagag, v'nishtabru kol atzmosav. We are recreating ourselves to be someone entirely new. A whole new perspective on life, a new perspective on who we are and what our opportunities can be when we restart and reestablish our existence. The Rambam, when he talks about the process of tshuva, tells us that there are a number of very obvious steps that all of us are supposed to take. So he says that we have to be sincere, and we should be shav bibechiyu v'tachanunim, we should have remorse, we should have regret, and supplicate ourselves before the Ribono Shel Olam. Ve'oset staka kifi kocho, says the Rambam, we should get staka. U'misrachek harbi min adavar shechatamo, obviously the Rambam says we have to distance ourselves from that terrible mistake that we may have made. But more than that, the Rambam goes further. The last step, he says, is mishana shemo. Mishana shemo. What does it mean to change our name? So we're familiar when you have a chola b'sof beso, when you have somebody who's very sick. So sometimes they'll do a shinoi hashem. What is that all about? Magic? It comes from this. The Rambam says, you want to be a real Baal Tshuva? You want to really understand what the process of Tshuva is? Of course you have to daven. Of course you have to say vidui. Of course you need to be sincere. You need to be serious. Of course you need to get stuck up. But there's something more than that. Mishana Shemo. The symbolic act to change our name, Kilomar, says the Rambam, Ani ish acher, ve'eni osa ha'ish, sha'asa osan ha'maisim. The Rambam says we need to look at ourselves and think, I am not that person. I have given myself the opportunity to be completely recreated. That is not me. And to highlight the significance of this moment, Mishana Shmo, I'll change my name because Ani Eni Oso Ha'ish Sha'asa Osan Ha'maisim. I am not that person that was involved in whatever it is that I was talking about. I am now somebody completely new. I know nothing at all about mystical topics. However, there's no however. And I know nothing at all. In the back of the siddur, you will find that in some siddurim they list what the mazalos are for each of the months of the year. Sometimes it's right near the halal, sometimes it's right after davening musaf on Rosh Chodesh. I don't know what any of them mean. I don't know what their significance is. But when you look at that, you will notice, what is the mazel of Chodesh Elul? No, not a twin. The mazel of Chodesh Elul is a besula, a virgin woman. What is the significance of a virgin woman being the mazel of Chodesh El. The Ramban, as quoted in some Svarim, writes that this is just to emphasize the bond, the connection, and the relationship, I guess the passion that we have to being engaged with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we talk about, we are one side of the deal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Besula, whatever it may be, and we try to imagine in our minds what this relationship should look like. And that is why we have the Mazel of Chodesh El as a Besula, because that's really what this time of year is meant to work on, our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Shimshon Pinkus writes in one of his Svarim that it goes so much deeper than that. And he says that Yirmiyah HaNavi, when he's begging the Jewish people to do tshuva, Yirmiyah HaNavi says the following, Shuvi Besulas Yisura. He refers to the Jewish people when he talks about tshuva as Shuvi Besulas Yisrael, come back, the virgin Jewish people. What is that all about? He explains as follows. When we talk on Rosh Hashanah and we describe what the day is for us, one of the descriptions that we give is Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha. Today is the beginning of everything. Today we have the opportunity to start fresh, to do everything new. And explains Rav Shimshon Pinkus, perhaps that's what we mean here when we say Shuvi Besulas Yisrael. We do mitzvos, we engage with HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a consistent basis. But we don't often do it like a besula, like a virgin woman who's meeting her beloved for the very first time, who's engaged in a relationship for the first time in her life, and is so passionate and so excited about it. Well, that's the opportunity that we have as we go through the process of tshuva. It's an opportunity that we're given to treat ourselves like a besula, like somebody who is engaging the Ribono Shel Olam for the very first time in our existence, for the very first time in our lives. And it's a privilege that we have, and it's a gift that tshuva gives us, like the Rambam says, that we have this opportunity to look at ourselves and say, Eini osa ha'ish she'asa osa namasu. I am not that person. I go through this process of 40 days, I take advantage of the gift that I was given, and I recognize that what this time of year gives me the opportunity to focus on is to give myself the chance to have a complete metamorphosis, a complete recreation of who I am, what I stand for, and what my life is really all about. I know I keep turning pages. It's not that long, don't worry. So, I want to share with you an article that I read that I think is funny in some way, but I think is extremely relevant when you think about it in the context of how it relates to our lives as religious Jews. Maybe I'm wrong, but every time I read anything or experience anything, I look at it through my eyes and how it relates to the work that I do. So I always tell people when they talk to me, just be forewarned, this is a drasha in the making. Whatever you share with me, I don't know where it's going to end up, but at some point it might end up somewhere. Obviously, I never share private or personal details in public, but it's just the way I think. So I read this article a couple of years ago, and it made me spurred to think about how it relates to our observance of mitzvahs, our observance, our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The article is entitled, The Illusion of Control, Why the World is Full of Buttons That Do Not Work. Okay? So here's what they say. Have you ever pressed a pedestrian button at a crosswalk and wondered if it really worked? Have you ever bashed a closed door button in an elevator while suspecting that it may in fact have no effect whatsoever? Okay? So we've all had this experience, especially in this building. You're not alone, and you may be right, because the world is full of buttons that don't actually do anything. They are sometimes called placebo buttons, buttons that are mechanically sound and can be pushed, but provide no functionality at all. This is according to Ellen Langer, a Harvard psychologist, who pioneered a concept known as the illusion of control. What is this concept, the illusion of control? It's brilliant. They do have a psychological effect. Taking some action leads people to feel a sense of control over a situation, and that feels very good. Rather than just being a passive bystander, doing something typically feels better than doing nothing. So when I stand at a street corner and I have the ability to push the button, even though it does absolutely nothing, it makes me feel like I'm in control. I'm doing something. I would rather do something than just stand there and do nothing. And the same goes with an elevator. In New York City, only about 100 out of 1,000 crosswalk buttons actually function, This was confirmed by a spokesperson from the city's Department of Transportation in an email. In London, which has 6,000 traffic signals, pressing a pedestrian button results in a reassuring wait, but that does not necessarily mean that the green or pedestrian stage and traffic signal will appear any sooner. And then they go on to the most jab button of them all, which is the closed door button in an elevator. Well, they write, if you live in the United States, it almost certainly will not work. To put it simply, the riding public will not be able to make the doors close any faster using that button. Why is that the case? Because in 1990, a bill was passed in Congress, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that act was, there were a number of Americans with disabilities who were getting stuck in the elevator because it was closing too quickly. They were getting caught in the doorway. And it was dangerous. And sometimes they were getting hurt. So Congress passed a bill that there's an amount of time that every elevator door needs to remain open legally. Which means every legally functioning elevator that we go into will never close before that allotted amount of time, no matter how many times you push the button. And all it is an illusion of control. Why is this relevant to any of us? When I read this, it made me wonder. So how much of Yiddishkeit is just a placebo button? How much of what we do every day is just an illusion of control? To make a person feel like they're doing something is better than to do nothing at all. Does our observance of Torah and mitzvahs lead us anywhere further than we were before we did it? What is the point? Why are we doing anything that we do? Inevitably, every year, around this time of year, sometime in the season, there's a well-known Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah that is quoted. It's the story of Elozer ben Dardaya. And the Gemara there tells a story of somebody who was involved in the most disgraceful acts of decadence, of immorality. And the Gemara says that after realizing how far off track his life had gone, he suddenly came to the realization it's time to become a Baal Tshuva. And he gets involved in a very overwhelming experience. The Gemara says he's crying and he's passing out from his remorse and his feelings of regret and the unbecoming lifestyle that he lived. And through his very passionate experience of tshuva, the Gemara says, and his very intense emotional roller coaster, the Gemara says the end of the story was Elazar ben Dardaya lost his life. Elazar ben Dardaya died. A bas kol came out upon his demise and said, Elazar ben Dardaya mezuman lechaye ha'olam haba. Rabbi Elazar ben Dardaya has a comfortable place in the world to come. Upon hearing that bas kol, the Gemara says, Bacha Rabbi v'yamar. Rabbi begins to cry and he says, Yesh kona olamo b'shah achas. How amazing is it that you can have a person who spent his entire life doing things that we cannot even talk about in a base medrash, and yet, the last moment before it's too late, he gets involved in a passionate tshuva experience, and look, he changed everything. Yesh kona olamo b'shah achas. How amazing is it? The power of tshuva. So I once saw the Mizricha Magid has an obvious question, which I never thought of until I saw him ask it. But he says, I understand that Rebbe is very overwhelmed by what he saw, by what he experienced. And he can't believe the power of tshuva is so overwhelmingly potent. Look what it can do. It can turn a person around like that. And he has a place in the world to come. A bas kol said about him that he's okay. He's in good standing. Ask the Mizricha Magid, well then, can you explain to me, why is Rebbe crying? Bacha Rebbe v'yamar, what's he crying about? This is a reason to celebrate. You should be going around to every community and sharing the story and telling everybody, if you doubt the power of tshuva, just look at what just happened that I was there to experience. There was a man by the name of Elazar ben Dardaya. He was the worst person in our community. He did everything wrong. There was nothing right about his life. And yet, look what he did. He turned everything around and HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted him. A bas kol even proved that the Ribono Shel Olam accepted his tshuva. What's Rebbe crying about? What's upsetting about that? Explains the Mizricha Magid so beautifully that perhaps what it means, Bacha Rebbe v'yamar, is as follows. While it's true, he says, that Rebbe Elazar ben Dardaya procured himself a space of entry into Olam Haba, while it's true that in the end he slipped under the cracks and he got in just at the last moment before it was too late, says Rebbe, you know why I'm crying? Because who cares? You made it into Olam Haba? Is that your only aspiration in life? What about the fact that every moment of your life that you just lived was wasted? What about the fact that there was no meaning or significance to your life? Who cares if you made it to Olam Haba? It's irrelevant. I'm crying because the journey of your life that you just lived was so pathetically sad. You wasted every minute of your life and did nothing of significance. That's a reason to cry. Bacha Rebbe V'yama. And what I took out of that story is, so often at this time of year, we see advertisements in all the different Jewish newspapers and publications. You give this amount of money, we'll go daven for you here, we'll bake challah for you, we'll say Parshas Haman for 36 days in a row, give a little more, we'll be 40 days in a row, with a minyan, without a minyan, men, women, everything. Is that what it's about? Is that what Yiddishkeit is being limited to? Does it help me in any way to have a more meaningful life when I see these opportunities? Is it going to push me forward in my opportunity to actually relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as an entity in my life that is so significant and so important? And on that, Bacha Rebbe V'yama. Rebbe says, if none of this leads you to a closer, more genuine and sincere relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then what is life itself? Of what value are all these little placebo buttons along the way, if not to push us to have a more genuine relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam himself? I'm reminded of a story I read in the biography of Rabbi Yashiv, who was the Gadol HaDor of our generation. Rabbi Yashiv was an amazing personality. Actually, if you read his biography, it's a little bit disappointing because it's not so exciting. You read it, and it says that he woke up early in the morning and he learned some more and he learned some more, and for a couple of years he did that. He lived till over 100, and that's what he did his whole life, pretty much. That's the story in a nutshell. He was an amazing personality. I'm understating his gadlus. But Rabbi Yashiv was a towering figure. And they write in the book that at some point in his life, I think he was over 100 when this happened, it was born in his family a sixth generation grandson. I don't even know what you call that. And the father of the child was so excited that his great-great-grandfather was still alive. And he came to Rabbi Yashiv in Yerushalayim and he asked him, can you come serve as the sandik in Bnei Brak for my son's bris? Rabbi Yashiv asked him, when is the bris? Where is the bris? He said, it's in Bnei Brak. He thought for a minute, he said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to make it. Now, he was over 100 years old. Why they didn't move the bris to Yerushalayim in his honor, I don't know. It's a good question. But the grandson was really trying hard to figure out how he's going to convince his grandfather to come participate in the bris of his child in Bnei Brak. So he decided to get smart. He said, Zaidi, you know, I understand. You have a busy schedule. You have a lot of things to do. I understand it's hard for you. But how can you give up this wonderful opportunity to be a sandik at the bris? Rabbi Yashiv said, I do this every day, and of course, I love to do it. I'm just not going to be able to make it. He says, no, 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 you don't understand. Don't you know that the Mekubalim say that if you have the great privilege of serving at a sixth-generation grandchild's bris as the sandik, you go straight into Olam Haba? So how are you going to give up this opportunity? Are you going to plan to have this opportunity again in the future? He said that his grandfather looked him in the face without flinching. And he said, my plan is to walk through the gates of Olam Haba through the front door. I don't need backdoor entrances. I lived every minute of my life doing for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm close with him. I don't need to slip in through the back door. I'm walking in through the front entrance of Olam Haba. That's what it means, Bacha Rebbe V'yamar. Yesh kona olama b'sha'a achas. Did you slip through the door? Did your skula actually work? Did the kevah rachel and the challah bakes actually do anything? Maybe. But did it draw me any closer to having a real relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Did it make me feel that I have anything more to do with him than I did before I was involved in this? That's what life is about. And that's what we need to think about at this time of the year. couple of years ago, there was a high school boy in our community who came over to me right after Yom Kippur, and he said, I just don't get it. So I'm a jerk all year, he says. It's not my words. He says, I can do whatever I want all year. Comes Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, I show up in Slichos, I daven, and everything's fine? Is that the way this works? So I told him, there's an amazing mashal of the Dubna Magid. All the mashalim of the Dubna Magid are amazing, but this one in particular I appreciate very much. It says there was a simple man living in a small town. Very limited exposure, very limited experience in the world. And he's getting older and he decides, you know, I should probably open my eyes a little bit and learn from what's going on in the big world out there. So he takes a trip to a big city, and he's so excited. He takes out a hotel room right in the middle of the town square, and he's really anticipating, learning everything that he can from how they do things in the big city. And he stays up all day and night looking out the windows, trying to see, where's this person going? Where's that person running? What is this building about? What is that truck about? He's trying to take it all in. He's so excited. Finally, after a couple of days, he goes to sleep at night. He's so drained. He's been up all day and night looking at everyone, trying to gain whatever he can from the experience. And one night he goes to sleep. In the middle of the night, he hears a big commotion outside, 3 o'clock in the morning. He runs to the window. He looks, what's happening? And he sees there's somebody standing in the middle of the town square with a big metal pot and a spoon, and he's smashing the pot. Can't figure out what's happening. People are rushing out of their homes. They're all converging in the middle of the street. He runs outside. He says, there must be something exciting going on. He goes out and he asks him, what are you doing? He says, well, there's a fire at the other side of town. He says, okay. So he watches as this person is just banging on the pot. Everyone's running. 5 minutes later, the fire's out. Unbelievable. And he's so impressed by what he's seeing. Comes home. He's telling all of his friends and his neighbors, all of his countrymen about everything that he saw, all that he learned. And they're all so nispoil, they're all so taken by everything that he brought back for them to enhance their lives. One night, 3 o'clock in the morning, a fire breaks out in the middle of town. Everyone's screaming, nobody knows what to do. We don't have any firemen here, what are we going to do? He says, everybody take it easy. I was just in the big city. One night there was a fire at 3 o'clock in the morning, all it takes is 5 minutes to put it out. Just give me 5 minutes. But he's looking at him in amazement. What's he going to do? Goes into his kitchen, grabs a pot and a spoon, starts smashing on the pot. Everybody's looking at him like he's out of his mind. What does this have to do with putting out fires? He says, you're all so simple and small-minded. You don't know how they do things in the big city. Let me tell you. When there's a fire, this is what we do. Within 5 minutes, it will be out. Meanwhile, the whole house is engulfed in flames. It's catching on to the next property. They know that it's going to spread all over town. Everybody's looking at him like he's insane. At some point, they finally realize this is not working, and they all go, put the fire out without him, and finally it is extinguished. So what went wrong? Dubna Magid writes, you could bang on a pot from today till tomorrow. The only point of banging on the pot is if it then is going to rouse people to get water and put the fire out. Banging on the pot alone does nothing at all. And that's what he didn't understand. He didn't put it together. He didn't understand that the banging on the pot itself is meaningless. It's worthless if it causes nothing to come afterward as a result of getting everyone's attention. Says the Dubna Magid, that's what it means when we come to a season of year and we're about to say slichos and we're going to be banging on the pot and we're going to ashamnu vagadnu al-chet shechatanu lefanecha and modim, open the aron, close the aron, put a talis on, take it off, daven here, daven there, go to a minyan, don't. Blow the shofar. All these things are very nice, but they don't put fires out. The only thing they do is grab our attention to then want to go the next step to do something that will inspire us to put that fire out. But banging on the chest alone and opening and closing the Aron Kodesh and standing up and sitting down and putting our feet together and 3 steps forward and 3 steps back does nothing without the next step, which is making it all mean something to us. Making it meaningful, making us understand this is not just an illusion of control. This is not just a placebo button. This is not just all of us pretending that something's actually happening when it's not really making any profound impact on the life that I live. And this is the opportunity that we all have to realize what tshuva is really all about for us. There's a beautiful word that one of the Svarim has. We say it in the Parsha of Tshuva. Uvikashta misham es Hashem Elokecha umatsasa kisid rishonu b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha. One of the Svarim explains perhaps what it means is, uvikashta misham, you have people sometimes running around the world to find a way to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Uvikashta misham, you go here, you go there, I'm going to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe's kever. That is not meant as a negative against any Lubavitcher Hasidim at all. But it's beautiful to go to a kever of a tzaddik. It's a wonderful thing if it does something for me. To go there and just assume that that's going to take care of my problem? To go there and write a letter or kvittel and leave it on the kever, what does that do for me? Nothing. Zero. Uvikashta misham, I'm going to look for a skula. I'm going to look for this. I'm going to sign up to do that. You run around the whole world trying to look for skulas. You're going to have people davening for you here. You're going to have people doing something over there on a chalabek and somewhere else. No. Umatsasa, where are you going to find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Kisid rishanu v'chalavavcha v'chal nafshecha. Ultimately, you'll find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu inside of yourself. You don't need to travel around the world to find and identify where the Ribono Shel Olam is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be found inside of all of us, if we only allow him in. Which is what the Navi says on Shabbos Shuvah. Kechui machem dvarim v'shuvu el Hashem. Rab Zevin writes in the Sefer on Chumash that perhaps what it means is, kechui machem dvarim, we all have dvarim, we all have all kinds of different things that excite us. Everybody has their idiosyncrasies, everybody has things that excite them, that are of interest to them and maybe to nobody else. Take all of those dvarim, all of those things that you feel a connection point, v'shuvu el Hashem. They're only meaningful if it allows you to go the next step, which is collect all of those things that you're involved with, all the things that pique your interest and curiosity, and bring them all into your service and quest for understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is the opportunity that we have during Chodesh Elul, during this season of year, Yemei HaSlichos, Yemei HaRachamim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for that relationship of the Besula. Shuvi Besulas Yisrael. We all have the opportunity to look at ourselves and realize that tshuva einena taloi. Tshuva is not a patch, it's not a band-aid. It is so much more profoundly impactful than that. Tshuva is the opportunity ka'adam shenafal min hagag v'nishtabru kol atzmosav. Tshuva is the gift that we're all given, where we see something that is completely broken, but we have the opportunity to do reconstructive surgery. We have the opportunity to be regenerated. It's a 40-day period. We're halfway through. And here is our chance to take advantage, to make meaning of every opportunity that we have to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to realize that ultimately, umatsasa, kisid rishenu v'chal levavcha v'chal nafshecha. We could run all over the world for a skula, for a good idea, for a great kivrei tzaddikim. It's all wonderful. But in the end, umatsasa, kisid rishenu, it's inside of us. We have the capacity, we have the ability, and we are given that gift, like the Rambam says, Mishana Shmo. Whatever may have been, whatever we may have been through, whatever complicated relationship we may have had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and all of us may have that. But the Ribono Shel Olam gives us the chance to redefine what this relationship is about, to reimagine what it's going to be. And I wish everybody, I don't know if I'm going to see all of you next week, we should all have the opportunity to be nichtav v'nichtam b'sifran shal tzadikim gemurim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be memale kol meshalos libeinu l'tova. Amen v'cheni yirazon. Good Shabbos, everybody.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. Very much appreciated. That was welcome.